4.166. The forms, categories such as transportation, in Ubik, regressed along orthogonal time axis, demonstrating 1. The existence of Plato's exemplar forms, and 2. Orthogonic time, i.e., another time axis from the one we're accustomed to. In psychosis, there is regression in the person, presumably from the adult back to child. The regression in me in March 1974, however, like the cars and planes et al. In Ubik, was a regression along the orthogonal time axis. The same as took place so that each form was replaced by a prior completed form. Hence, I didn't become a child. The child I was, but a former man, an adult of the same age as mine, that is, level of personal entelechy completion. I never was that former man, as in Ubik, the present form, me, an adult 44 years old, rolled back to reveal the creeped morphosis concealed within, exactly as, say, the modern refrigerator rolled back to become, i.e., to be revealed as containing, the old 1937 turret top GE. The modern two-door freezer refrigerator never was that old turret top, except along an entirely different form axis, that of cooling storage appliances per se. As to why I regressed along the horizontal, orthogonal time axis, which may be unique or nearly so in human experience, could be due to my having written Red Ubik and knowing about hypertime, or also a current unique weakening in some way of the vertical time force, or both. However, this view of it is a linear view, a straight-line view. Maybe a metaphor is more appropriate, such as the seed within the fruit, i.e., the seed matures, an internal growth motion, which is to say upward, outward, forward, to the surface, at the same time a reciprocal action of withdrawal. The rotten fruit itself dies away and falls off, to reveal the seed within. The seed now being ready to open and cease its seed stage growth period. This better expresses a two-way reciprocal action, without the unilateral concept of regression, which alone is inadequate. Perhaps I did not retreat backward along any timeline, but rather Rome came forward. Rome equals the world of tears, which equals the U.S. as it's about to become, by logic, then, Rome equals the U.S. as it's about to become. This solves the mystery of why so much material in Acts is present in tears. Note: the Acts of the Apostles from the New Testament tells the story of the early church, focusing largely on the ministry of the Apostle Paul. Dick speaks frequently about the presence of Acts material in his 1974 novel, Flow My Tears, the policeman said. Though Dick claims not to have read Acts at the time the novel was written, Dick focuses on two incidents from the biblical narrative: Paul's trial before the procurator Marcus Antonius Felix, 24:1-27, and Philip the Evangelist's conversion of an unnamed Ethiopian eunuch, 8:26-40. The former connection largely hinges on the similarity of names. In Tears, Felix Buckman interrogates Jason Taverner, just as the procurator Felix interrogates Paul. The latter incident shows a more striking correlation. Philip, traveling south from Jerusalem, passes an Ethiopian who is studying a passage from the book of Isaiah. Philip interprets the passage for the eunuch, who then asks to be baptized. Dick saw a remarkable similarity between this story and the conclusion of Tears, in which Buckman is overcome by compassion and love for a stranger, a black man at an all-night gas station. Dick was also struck by Philip the Evangelist's name, no doubt particularly since the scene that closes Tears was based on an event in his own life. GM. Endnote. It is because all that material describes a specific space-time continuum, that of Rome circa 100 AD. In writing Tears, I depicted simultaneously 1. The space-time continuum Rome circa 100 AD, and 2. Future America, which turned out to be almost America at this time, 1970-74. What this depicts, then, is a moving forward of Rome, not a regression on my part. If I were standing still, the same processes would be observed, i.e., the rotten external docos fruit of this society falling away to reveal the seed within, the world of tears, which underlay lies our own. It is the iron beneath the pretty plastic. This is true revelation. The whole novel, not just the dream, is revelation about our world, where and when we are, our true ontological underlying space-time continuum, its nature. Piercing the veil, seeing into the heart of our present world, I saw Urbs Roma. It underlay lies, it is the core, the seed within the fruit, what our world actually is once all the layers of delusion are stripped away. Seed, then, equals being. Rotten fruit or veil equals surface appearance. Only the external trappings, the names, have been changed. Successive layers of reality are involved, a penetrating into the depths further and further. But time, too, horizontal time, is involved, because somehow these layers are arranged along that axis, since that is the form-completing axis. But progression, rather than regression? In terms of penetration to essence, to being, past and future horizontal time views, this is circular time? In favor of this view, along this time axis, there are the eternal idola, that which always reoccurs, the one behind the many, the unchanging behind the flux. Well, that is what I saw, the one, idola. Here was Urbs Roma, which contained within it, as a subseed, or rather a secret seed within seed, the fish Christians at work transmuting, transforming metal to grief to love, the progression in tears. Metal would equal power, grief, loss, love, a reaching out for to embrace what one doesn't have or is. This identifies the horizontal time axis, orthogonal time, as the logos time in which forms of an archetypal sort are there already, and always complete, from which our world is stamped. This is not time as we know it, but eternity. Think of the orthogonal time as a circular drum continually rotating, and as it rotates, it prints out on the continually moving linear strip of our time of change the perfect forms. Thus, both times intermingle to form our world and our conception of time, which is really these two times. Note. Here Dick provides a concrete analogy that helps illuminate his generally Platonic take on orthogonal time. The eternal forms sit on a circular drum and stamp themselves onto a moving strip of time, literally informing the linear flow and creating the two-source time that we misrecognize as a single fusion of novelty and repetition, change and return. Essentially, Dick is describing a Platonic typewriter. One thinks in particular of the IBM Selectric model popular in the 1970s. An electric typewriter whose type elements, rather than being attached to separate bars, rest on a single golf ball that rotates and pivots before striking the ribbon and impressing ink on the page. Dick's metaphysics of media tech here shows how much he saw writing of any kind as a dream machine that models cosmic processes. ED. End note. If orthogonal time is circular, then there is no regression along its axis in the linear sense. It would be a perpetual return, always a return. The direction of movement is one of depth, not length. That would be why to regress along orthogonal time, one would still remain here in terms of vertical or linear time. If any sort of regression in orthogonal time were possible, it would be simply away from being, traveling back down from reality to appearance, away from Plato's real ideas or archetypes. In orthogonal time, there is no before versus now versus after. There are only degrees of depth or truth or actualization of creeped morphosis. More so, more complete in pattern emergence terms, clarity, the outlines emerging as if developing together in totality from invisible to blurred to clear to absolutely clear, as if a lens were moving toward absolute resolution of an image always there itself, never changing. I was not led back to Urbs Roma, or even forward, but down to. It was, is, will be always there. The only question left unanswered is, why did the rotary incising drum of archetypal forms print out Urbs Roma instead of another form? Is that the only form it can print out? No, it prints out all the idola there are, as functions of the logos activity. But for our space-time continuum, USA 1974, Urbs Roma, specifically Rome of about 100 to 200 AD, is the specific form paradigm. If I had looked about me while up in the mountains of Canada, I probably would have penetrated to some other essence, i.e. would have perceived another eidos. However, that this Urbs Roma, circa 100 AD, was what I saw shows me why Tears simultaneously is about Rome and about the USA of the 1970s to 1980s. They are the same eidos below, printed out from the same form. It is precisely this circular rotary motion which makes it possible for us to distinguish the fact that the elements there are eternal, since when they leave, they reappear, hence cannot be destroyed, as can any given thing along the linear time axis. One might say, there are two Romes. There is or was the phenomenal Rome printed out in linear time, which is now gone, like every other printed out thing. But Rome, the Platonic archetype, still exists, outside of our time. That latter Rome is what I saw. Letter to Claudia Bush, February 14, 1975. 4.172. Dear Claudia, if I were to say to you, the universe which we perceive is a hologram, you might think I had said something original, until you realized that I had only updated Plato's metaphor of the images flashed on the walls of our cave, images which we take to be real. The universe as hologram is more arresting as an insight, though, because the hologram is so strikingly like the reality which it refers to, being formed in ersatz cubic volume, for one thing, that we could take this to be more than a mere poetic statement. Also, we can more readily grasp a kind of elaborate mechanism underlying our perceptible universe, i.e., the enormously intricate forces which keep it intact. I conceive our universe, the hologram, to consist of an infinite number of laminated layers arranged in sequence, but not truly in anything that can be called time or space. Time is our perception of our own movement as we are driven, as in the form of a worm or screwdriver, through these successive layers of laminations. Instead of the film moving, so to speak, the audience moves. The pressure exerted on us to go through the laminations is time. The sense that there is genuine sequence of encounter arranged somehow is space. Basically, we are, as Aristotle realized, entelechies, each of us an individual entelechy. But we are all cross-linked by the logos or plan. He failed to understand that the systems within each entelechy, which is to say within each living organism, are disinhibited, are signaled to fire in a prearranged order as the organism or entelechy encounters the various significant laminations of the hologram. Thus, each entelechy and all entelechies are linked to the hologram, forming a cosmos which contains no accidents or misfirings, since it was, is, will be formed outside time and space, probably, as Bishop Berkeley somewhat saw, but saw quite wrongly, formed, one, either as the body of God, in which case God is psyche to soma, as each of us is, or two, the hologram is not a body at all. And God is then nous, total mind, and what we experience is a projection of his thoughts, and it can be said that the underlying reality beneath the hologram, that which projects it for us to dwell within it and encounter it, is presenting us with an aspect of itself, its total self arranged in a complex grid-like form that consists of a total living organism, which is not extensive in time and space except for the projected hologram, which is to it as workshop is to workman, the Sufi saying I quoted in my previous letter. The view that the universe is the body of God is to project the Cartesian dualism, which even when applied to ourselves is almost certainly spurious and destroys our picture of harmony. A superior analogy would be to regard the universe as consisting of language, that is, a communications network of signaling systems and messages which create cosmos out of chaos, harmony out of random collision. The older mechanistic view can be discarded and replaced by this idea that stress or pressure, as in an endless series of torsion bars, rods, drive shafts, etc., as model of the universe presents an unnecessarily cruel image of force derived from a primitive stage of our society's technological development. It is not required that each entity within the universe be compelled to act, since the notion of being compelled suggests that it does not want to or would not voluntarily do its part within the total system. Obviously, the cosmologists of the mechanical force view knew perfectly well that our own industrial world was supported by a slave population, which had to be compelled to work, and which got nothing back for it. The universe doesn't work that way, because there is no slave-master division. It is an organism. It interacts. It has a parity of purpose and a harmony of identity. Most questions on the order of why are we here can't be answered because they presuppose that each of us is discrete, set off from the universe or environment, confronting it rather than a subsection of it. Modern field theory in physics will soon be extended by a process of reasonable extrapolation to the human level, at which time in the development of our understanding, we will see that each of us has a reciprocal interaction with our universe. We are not particles, but loci virtually arbitrarily postulated for the purpose of convenience. Hence, our right brains or right hemisphere minds are not ours really, but as Bergson intuited, transducers or transformers which engage us within the total field. When we finally achieve bilateral parity in brain functioning, we will be better able to view our individual selves as microstations within an enormous network of similar stations, which probably are so far-ranging in time and space that the idea of making contact with ETIs is like desiring to find air here on Earth. Well, enough for now, and so to breakfast.